This is Jim Inkster coming today on Talk Louisiana. We will visit with LSU Law Professor Philip Hackney. He's an expert on tax law, and he'll comment on the new tax law's impact on nonprofit organizations. Also, Capitol Bureau Chief Mark Ballard of The Advocate on the upcoming special session, which starts Monday. Also, the continuing feuds that Governor John Bel Edwards has with the Attorney General Jeff Landry and with the junior U.S. Senator and possible opponent in the governor's race next year, John Neely Kennedy. LSU's most decorated gymnast, Susan Jackson, and former Tiger gymnast Malia Mathis will be here to discuss the revelation that Dr. Larry Nassar sexually assaulted 250 female gymnasts. Nassar has been sentenced to what amounts to life in prison for his crimes. Now the news on 89.3 WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Coming a bit later, we'll hear from Mark Ballard, Capitol Bureau Chief from The Advocate, and two former LSU gymnasts, Susan Jackson and Malia Mathis, on the trials and tribulations of Larry Nassar, the doctor for the U.S. Olympic team, who is now in jail for most likely the rest of his life. We begin with Philip Hackney. Professor Hackney has been at the LSU Law Center for 7 years, former businessman who owned Caliban's Books back in the day from 1992 to 99. I was a frequent visitor to his fine establishment, and he since has become an expert on many matters involving the law, including tax law, and that's one of the reasons why we have him here. And it is always a pleasure to see you, Dr. Hackney.
Glad to be here. Thanks, Jim.
The new tax law. It has many implications, but one that hasn't been focused upon a great deal is how it will affect nonprofits. How will it?
Sure. I think the biggest deal for nonprofits is that the charitable contribution deduction is still there, but for most people, they'll no longer be able to take it. If you're familiar with when you pay your taxes, you can potentially take itemized deductions. Charitable contributions are often something you'd put into an itemized deduction. But Congress substantially increased your standard deduction to $24,000. And that basically means most people will no longer itemize, no longer in effect take the charitable contribution deduction. So I think folks like the United Way are really nervous about the hit that your nonprofits and your community are going to take in the coming years.
I would imagine any nonprofit.
Any nonprofit. It's universities. Churches probably are a little less insulated, a little more insulated, because people tend to give to their church regardless. But other nonprofits, including LSU, very much worried.
Including public radio, public television.
Absolutely. It's a big deal. At the end of the day, we're economic beings, and we respond to the incentives that are given to us, and this is a significant one.
Your number is 877-217-5757, wherever you are, locally 297-5633, and you can email us at talk@talklouisiana.org. But this does not affect the tax season from last year, so people who are filing their taxes for 2017. There we go.
Yep.
For last year, when they're doing it, as most people do around this time, they still play by the old rules.
For the most part. There's actually some interesting retroactive legislation. So, for instance, if you have a medical expense deduction, typically you had to have more than 10% of your gross income before you could take that deduction. Congress changed that retroactively. So if you only have to get above 7.5% of your adjusted gross income. So if you've got some folks out there.
All right. Well, that's actually a good thing.
Yes, absolutely. For the folks that have big expenses, that's a big deal. They're getting some money back.
But as far as the discussion we were having regarding nonprofits, that kicks in for
as far
this,
as nonprofits,
this year.
That's this year. And a lot of donations actually went into a number of nonprofits before the end of this past year. So nonprofits were probably impacted nicely towards the end of this past year, but are expecting to take a hit in this year.
877-217-5757, and I have some questions to talk at talklouisiana.org about some other matters for Dr. Hackney, and we will ask him about those. But as far as the implications of the tax bill, this is a pretty sweeping piece of legislation, isn't it?
It's enormous. I just went to an ABA tax section conference out in San Diego a week or two ago, and everybody, this is all the major tax folks of nationally there, and it's everybody's trying to wrap their head around it. No matter what area you're in, whether it's international tax or partnership tax, it's significant. It's transformative in the way that we think about taxation.
Mm-hmm. All right. Kylie writes about my statement saying that it was a good thing about the medical deductions. It's good for the people who qualify, but she also notes that it will kick additional holes in the deficit. And that's the major concern of this bill, is that we have this $20 trillion debt. It's not likely to be going down as a result of this tax bill.
No. In fact, the Republicans passed a budget before the tax bill went down that allowed them to increase the deficit by $1.5 trillion. It's $1.5 trillion over 10 years. But that's a significant chunk of change, obviously, and we're already seeing some significant concerns where the deficit is going.
Evelyn in New Orleans. Hello, Evelyn. You're on Talk Louisiana with Dr. Hackney.
Oh, I'm sorry.
All right. Let's make sure we got the right question from Evelyn. I think her question is about something else, but it's pertaining to this issue with the president and the $130,000 in hush money.
Sure.
And this is money that the president's lawyer, Michael Cohen, paid to Stormy Daniels, the former Stephanie Clifford from Scotlandville Magnet High School, who apparently had a relationship with the president. Does that in any way violate any laws of the land?
Yeah, it's potentially an illegal contribution to a campaign. If it's determined that Michael Cohen made a $130,000 contribution, this would be similar to the John Edwards situation. Essentially, the payoff was made to Stormy Daniels in order to benefit the campaign. And if that is found, then that's a larger campaign contribution than he could have made during the year. Has to be disclosed. Mm-hmm. There are a number of issues that arise as a result.
Well, this lawyer, Michael Cohen, he stated that there was no relationship between the president and Stephanie Clifford, but then paid her $130,000 in hush money and says he did it with his own funds, that he didn't get it from the president or anybody else. But if he lied about the relationship, why would you pay hush money if there was no relationship? Does that make him vulnerable?
I think he has been, at least the latest statement, he was trying to as artfully design that statement because he said he didn't get money from the Trump organization or the Trump campaign. He didn't specify that he didn't get it from someone else. And he said that he facilitated a payment. So my guess is that he is trying to design his conversations regarding mm-hmm. this as carefully as possible. But obviously, as an attorney, you're supposed to speak honestly as you think through these things, and would hope mm-hmm. to have a higher standard of ethics among
in
our
any,
attorneys.
In any public forum.
Yes, absolutely.
And that brings us, this is an interesting question. We're kind of veering off on a different path here, but a very interesting question. Rachel asks about lawyers who misrepresent themselves on social media, like Facebook, if they give their wrong birthday or something. Does that make them vulnerable to some kind of disciplinary action?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, within the tax area, there are all sorts of regulations there that if you're giving out tax advice, you can get yourself into trouble if it's improper. So I think lawyers have to be very careful, including myself, as I think mm-hmm. about how I respond to these things here, lest someone take that as advice from me.
Mm-hmm. Well, when you're applying to law school, as I once did, I never went, but you're asked all these questions, and some people, years later, they go back and look at those answers, and if they weren't truthful, it could be a big problem.
Absolutely. It's one of the things we have at the Law Center all the time, which is a student will come in. They're supposed to disclose all sorts of activities that have happened in the past, and these are very consequential for the bar purposes if they haven't, and they have mm-hmm. to come back in and disclose those things later when they get discovered.
Okay, and here is a question about the tax law, and the story is it's going to simplify matters, that it'll be easier to file.
Yeah, no.
You said, yeah, no.
Let me step back.
In fact, Steve Scalise said you can do it on a postcard.
Yeah.
I don't believe that, but that's what he said.
So The one simplification is the standard deduction being increased. That will probably simplify it for a lot of people. But the vast majority of the law significantly increases complexity. We'll get less revenue and we'll have more complexity. There's a one provision that in particular, it drives me nuts from a tax purist standpoint. 199A allows certain people, engineers and architects, but not doctors and lawyers, to take 20% off the top of their income. So you, Jim, could potentially, if you can use 199A, say $100,000 in income comes into you, you can lop off $20,000 even before you get to the table.
And still get a standard deduction?
And still get a standard deduction on top of that.
Well, it's going to make a lot of taxpayers happy.
It will make some taxpayers happy, but some not happy. So there's one provision that allows cooperatives, farmers cooperatives, to allow not just to 20% of your income, but 20% of your revenue to be deducted, which means certain farmers get a better deal from selling to cooperatives than they do to your family-operated grain elevator. This has caused a great stir in the farming community because it's really shutting down some major grain operators. So it might make some happy, but it's really ticking off some others.
Now, the president says billionaires like him are going to be hit hard by this.
No, generally not. Generally, it is a great benefit to them. I mean, just number one, a drop to 37% rate. Overall, it's a significant reduction for the billionaires.
877-217-5757. We'll continue a few more minutes with Philip Hackney, LSU Law Professor on the new tax law. And also we'll hear from Mark Ballard, Capital Bureau Chief from The Advocate, after this brief time out of 90 seconds on 89.3 WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. On deck is Mark Ballard, Capital Bureau Chief for The Advocate. A few more minutes with Philip Hackney. Dr. Hackney's been at the LSU Paul M. A. Bear Law Center for 7 years. And your number is 877-217-5757. Dan downtown. Hi, Dan. You're on the air with Dr. Hackney.
Yeah, Doctor. Is the new tax law Trump's spiteful reaction against high tax states like California and Massachusetts that didn't support him, but do provide proper services for their citizens, unlike the red state South?
Yeah, I mean, it's a to me, this is one of the big problems with the way the tax bill was done. I believe they took actions not just against the blue states, but frankly, against the nonprofit community. Because there seemed to be some sort of political payback for these communities. It was a strange way to go about doing tax law. Not every choice was improper. Frankly, I think, for instance, the reduction in the home mortgage interest deduction is a good tax policy, but the efforts towards harming political enemies I find very problematic.
A state like California has it's people paying taxes, as we do here, but on a federal level, it's a state that pays more in its share of taxes per person than, say, Louisiana. I think it's like 87 cents per actual dollar. So they're getting underrepresented by their tax dollars. And in Louisiana, we're getting overrepresented. But yet states in the South, which almost all are being overrepresented as far as the benefits they get from the federal government, are generally the most anti-tax states in the country.
Yeah, it's a fascinating thing. There's plenty of books, plenty of ink been spilled on this question of why states react in these various ways. I don't have the answer to that. But yeah, I mean, you find states like New York and California, incredible amount of business there. And they tend to be higher taxed. Texas is an interesting example of a lower tax state that has significant activities going on. But it's hard to figure out exactly why the different states behave in the way they do.
877-217-5757. Mark Ballard in just a moment. And a listener notes, I mentioned Caliban's books. That was your place. And that was one of the real special places in Baton Rouge. It's hard to make a living in that line of work, though, isn't it?
It was. If I had made any money at it, I would still be doing it today. I loved Caliban's books. It was a great pleasure to be a part of the community in that way. We sold used and rare books, and we got some really – I had a Tennessee Williams first edition of A Streetcar Named Desire. I still miss those days.
Oh, my goodness.
Working with those books.
That's fabulous. How much did it sell for?
That was about $1,000 at the time.
I bet it's worth five times that today.
Yeah, it's probably about $5,000. It was a beautiful copy of that book.
David in Atlanta, our final caller for Dr. Hackney. David, you're on Talk Louisiana with Dr. Philip Hackney from LSU.
Good morning, gentlemen. Catherine Rampell had a column in the Washington Post a couple of days ago. You know, it seems like the Republicans love to cut taxes for the wealthy, but they hate to cut taxes, or raise taxes, rather, when it's helping people like receive, you know, help the poor, like receiving Medicaid.
All right. Well, what's your question?
Well, how much of a liar Trump was when he said the tax cuts will hurt him? It eliminates the alternative minimum tax, and he said it's going to hurt him. Isn't Trump essentially the biggest liar to ever come down the pike?
I mean, there's plenty of stuff looking at the lies that he tells on a particular day. But in terms of the tax bill, just to be straightforward on it, in the first couple of years, most people see a tax cut. But after that time, the bill is set to effectively increase taxes on lower-income families and keep the cuts for the higher income. So,
all right. Well, thank you, Dr. Hackney. Good
thank
to see you.
You.
Let's do it again soon.
Glad to be here.
And we're joined now by Mark Ballard, Capital Bureau Chief for The Advocate. And Mark will be busy, as you can imagine, in the next few weeks as a special session is ensuing Monday. And Governor John Bel Edwards has quite a daunting task. The legislature does as well. But is anything going to happen? What's the consensus right now on the prospects for some kind of an agreement?
Well, I get asked this all the time, and I think that there is no consensus on what's going to happen. Even if you look in the Capital News Bureau here at the Advocate, all of us have a different idea of what is going to happen from nothing. And then we go into the regular session and probably with a budget that's going to require deep cuts and then come back at the end of the regular session. I kind of think that they will pass some of the easy stuff and then it will come nowhere near what is necessary. And then hopefully during the regular session they can make up the cuts or make changes that will keep us from having to come back at the end of the regular session. So, and then there are others that think, you know, they're going to buckle down and do it, and everything will be taken care of during this special session.
877-217-5757. Governor Edwards is facing the prospect of intense political opposition in the next year and a half. There is an election in October of next year. We're talking 20 months away from the primary. And even though there is no announced candidate against him, Mark, this is the political season. It has begun, and so this session has a political component to it.
That is true. I mean, there is, and actually, there's been a political component to his entire administration with the kind of national partisan politics leaning in to what's happening here in Louisiana. The numbers have come out for how much has been raised, and you're looking at Jeff Landry has raised about $1 million. John Kennedy, I haven't looked at the numbers, but they came in, and we're expecting them to be over $1 million
well. Well over. I think in the multiple millions. So Governor Edwards will have some opposition of significance, and if it's Senator Kennedy, it'll be opposition with a lot of money. And that brings us to a question from a listener, Tracy, asking if Senator Kennedy, if he runs against the governor, can transfer the money he's raised as a senator at the federal level to state coffers for a state race. Can he do that?
Well, the short answer is no, he can't, but we saw in his Senate race that he was able to come up with a way to move money out of his very plush state account into a PAC that basically did advertising for him. And I would be surprised if we saw the same sort of thing. David Vitter had the same issue in which he had to do a couple of steps, but basically was able to use or have access to the money that he had raised on a federal level.
And, of course, David Vitter lost, but it wasn't because of a lack of funds. Senator Kennedy, along with Attorney General Landry, are at odds with the governor, and all you have to do is look at your paper today. In the first three pages, there are big stories on these feuds that the governor has with these Republicans who were in high places. And Senator Kennedy believes that the criminal justice plan, which was a bipartisan plan that the governor supported, and even David Vitter supported, by the way, as a lobbyist, that it's been nothing but trouble so far. And the governor has the governor, who usually doesn't respond vigorously to criticism, he has so on this front. What do you think of this?
Well, I think that Senator Kennedy has took a long view of this, an incorrect view. I mean, because what the governor did point out was that there were numerous things that he took liberties with in his release. Part of this, I think, has to do with there can't be anything that Governor Edwards does that is workable, and so they need to criticize everything, and that's what the Attorney General is doing. That's what Senator Kennedy is doing.
Mark Ballard is with us for a little bit longer, Capitol Bureau Chief for The Advocate. A session is starting Monday, and if you picked up your Advocate today, front page, the headline reads, Landry Edwards at odds over opioids, and we'll talk about that in a bit more. You can send us an email to talk@talklouisiana.org. And also, we'll hear from two former gymnasts at LSU, the most decorated gymnast of all time in Tigertown, Susan Jackson and Malia Mathis, who was on the team after Susan, right after her. They have some thoughts about the situation involving Dr. Larry Nassar, who's headed to jail for the rest of his life. That's where he is now, and he's not likely to get out. We'll talk about it, but more with Mark Ballard after this brief timeout for the news with Karen Henderson on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Ali Baltazar is producing with Becca Dill today, and your number is 877-217-5757. Email us talk@talklouisiana.org. A few more minutes with Mark Ballard, Capitol Bureau Chief for The Advocate. He's gearing up for the opening of the special session. This is to address a projected $1 billion shortfall, the so-called fiscal cliff that will become part of our world on July 1st, unless lawmakers and the governor come to some sort of an agreement that will involve more money in state coffers. Otherwise, there'll be some severe cutting come July 1. Phil in Jefferson Terrace. Hi, Phil. You're on the air with Mark.
Hello, gentlemen. Good morning, gentlemen. Yeah, I'll just think back and just maybe look through the careers of some Louisiana politicians, like where they were and where they are today. I'd say John Breaux, Mary Landrieu, and golly, who's the other fellow? But Richard Baker. I mean, they tend to turn their connections into millions, you know, after they get out of office.
All right. Well, Bob Livingston, go down the list. Almost all of the congressional members become lobbyists, and it pays.
Don't be lobbyists at that.
It pays well.
Yeah,
pays very well. But is it? And there's nothing wrong with being a lobbyist. But is it appropriate for a former member of Congress to use his or her connections to work the Hill after they leave office?
But I mean, I got to think. But I'm a prude, so I kind of think that no, it's not. But I mean, every single one of them have done that, and you know, made millions in doing so.
You know what?
Including Senator Vitter.
Well, that's true. Vitter, J. Bennett Johnston, he did it too. I think all the former U.S. senators have done it, except for Elaine Edwards, who wasn't there very long. But you know who said, he proudly says, "I never did that," is Buddy Romer. Of course, he came to the state and became governor, but one thing for those who
and ran a bank. So,
he did run a bank, yes. But he got it. He got in the business world, and very few of these former lawmakers really venture into business unless they're a lobbyist or a lawyer, and that is a business too. But it's a kind of business that they're familiar with, and I guess as humans, we gravitate to what we know best.
I would say that that's true, and we can't say that after they get out of public life that they can't earn a living. So
That's true. That's true.
I'm up in the air about this. However, I mean, I feel the uncomfortableness. Again, I'm a prude, but I feel the uncomfortableness of them becoming lobbyists, lobbying their former colleagues.
Well, maybe it should be known going in when they run for office that if they're elected, they cannot become a lobbyist, and that might preclude a lobbyist dealing with the former entity they were involved with. Maybe that would preclude some people from actually running for office.
It probably would. If you recall that was one of the platform planks of Foster Campbell when he ran for the U.S. Senate, and he got pretty soundly trounced.
Yep, 39%. Mike in Sherwood. Mike, good morning. You're on with Mark.
Right. Two items that I don't hear discussed, in my opinion, often enough with respect to the fiscal cliff in Louisiana is the two major causes. The first major cause, in my opinion, was the Grover-Norquist twist of Bobby Jindal giving away billions of dollars of tax credits or whatever reductions to industry. And the second one is that the oil and gas industry itself shot itself in the foot by being so greedy and rapacious with the expansion of natural gas exploration that they and offshore oil exploration that they shot the price out of oil and gas and killed the industry here for a while. How are those kinds of problems going to be addressed by our wonderful legislators, I wonder?
Thank you, Mike.
Well, on the first one, there is an effort afoot to kind of change those exemptions that were offered, not just under, but Bobby Jindal super fueled it for sure, but it's been going back for several years. They are running into a buzzsaw of opposition from the business community that see it, and rightfully so, as a tax increase. If we remove the exemption, then they have to pay more taxes. And so that is something that I'm not sure we're going to see too much of, frankly, but there will be an effort to do so. And then on the oil and gas front, we also need to remember that the OPEC nations also lowered their prices to try to drive the smaller guys in America out of business. But there was an incredible expansion because of the technology involved.
And lastly, this feud that continues between the Attorney General and the governor, it's front page news again, and this time they're fighting over opioids. What's going on?
Well, the Attorney General believes that Medicaid expansion has basically created an opioid black market in which drug kingpins will, push folks that can qualify for Medicaid to go get the pills and then sell them on the streets. And he calls it like making a credit card for a drug pusher. This is a common theme among the Republicans nationally. The administration, the Louisiana Department of Health, they flatly deny it, saying that this is all kind of conspiracy stuff. They're saying that there's been a decrease in prescriptions, there has been an increase in drug treatment, and there's been no numbers, no evidence that the drug kingpins are grabbing these prescriptions from Medicaid, and there's been no evidence that there's been an increase in opioid addictions since the expansion came in.
Well, Mark Bauer, thank you for your insights, and we'll be calling on you again next week. It's always a pleasure to talk with Mark Bauer, Capital Bureau Chief from The Advocate. Thanks, Mark.
Thank you, sir.
See you soon. And we're joined in studio now by two former LSU gymnasts, Susan Jackson and Malia Mathis. And Susan is first up. She is the most decorated gymnast in the history of Louisiana State University, the 2010 Honda Award winner, which is the equivalent of the Heisman Trophy for gymnasts, and she was the 2010 all-around national champion. And she and Malia are here to talk about the sensitive issue of Dr. Larry Nassar, Larry Gerard Nassar. He was the USA Gymnastics National Team doctor a physician at Michigan State University, but now he's in prison. His cumulative criminal acts of sexual assault were the basis of a scandal in which he was accused of molesting over 250 girls and young women, including a number of well-known Olympic gymnasts dating as far back as 1992, and he has admitted to at least 10 of the accusations. 877-217-5757. I know this is a sensitive topic, but an important one. And Susan Jackson, you knew Dr. Nasser rather well.
I did. He was my doctor since I was probably 11, when I was first on the USA team, up until I was 17.
So 6-7 years?
Yeah.
Did you have any experiences like some of these other women have said they did?
Oh, I did. I have my own experiences with Larry. I don't know that I'm going to have very many fans after saying this, but yeah, I mean, obviously he was always our trainer. If we were ever injured at a competition or at training camp up in North Houston, then we would always go see him. And yeah, when this story first came out and I didn't even know it was Larry, I automatically knew it was Larry because of my own personal stories with him.
Well, you said you weren't going to have many fans. Why?
Because, I mean, and I just want to say first that I do believe all the women coming out, and I support them 100%. But for me, I mean, I had a similar kind of treatment done on me in a very kind of personal area in the perineum, which is between two holes. anyway, and his finger did slip, and I was penetrated by him, but I don't believe that I was that I am a victim. And I say that I won't have many fans because every time I tell this story, people are like, you're an idiot. Why don't you? You're being manipulated by him as well. Why aren't you? Why don't you believe it? Why aren't you coming forward? You know. So.
Well, this kind of treatment, is it a legitimate therapy or was...
DO, he's a DO. For a DO, yes, it's a legitimate treatment. It was a pressure point to relieve sciatic pain. And it worked. So that was, I mean, it got me through the competition. And it got me through training camps, so.
Well, some of these women have alleged a bit more than this, maybe a lot more than this. But this particular treatment, the New York Times actually ran a story this Tuesday. It was on D6, but it says some people are defending this pelvic massage when prescribed correctly can provide pain relief, but generally, it's noted that if it's a man examining a woman, it's usually left to a female to do it, and gloves are normally used. In this case, it doesn't sound like that was what was going on.
I mean, the way that in which he did do it and the fact that we were minors, minor women, and he didn't have any adults in the room, no parental consent, no gloves. I mean, that just completely changes the story, but... Again, for me, I don't feel like I'm a victim, but I completely can agree with all the women who were, and I support them. And and I don't know that he was doing it necessarily. I mean, I think he was doing it for his own pleasure, and it had gotten too far. But I do believe that
you?
It is. Not with me. I don't believe with me.
And he was your doctor for
6 years.
6 years. Yeah, it's an interesting story. We're going to hear from Malia Mathis. Malia, were you ever treated by Dr. Nasser?
No, I never met him personally or was even in the same arena, like the same world as that. So.
Okay, well, we'll talk with Malia Mathis, who certainly was examined by other doctors, and we'll discuss this tragedy that is ongoing. We're back after this pause with more Talk Louisiana on WRK. This is Jim Engster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana, a most sensitive topic, and we're joined by two veteran LSU gymnasts, the most decorated gymnast of all, Susan Jackson, who was the 2010 Honda Award winner, and Malia Mathis, a four-time letterwoman at LSU on the gymnastics team, coached by Dee Dee Brough, and they are commenting about this revelation regarding Dr. Larry Nasser. Over 250 girls and young women say they were abused by him when he was the Olympic coach. And Susan was under the tutelage of Dr. Nasser for 6 years. And she said he did not act inappropriately, but did give her some treatment in a very personal area. And that according to her, helped her back. But Nassar is accused by over 250 women, and there were 37,000 images of child pornography found on his personal computer, including a story that has been released by the court saying there was a video of Nassar molesting underage girls. So I don't think you were defending Dr. Nassar, but you just said your personal experience with him was not a bad one. But how did this go on for years and years, Susan, with people not coming forward before now?
So it's funny that you said I was not defending him, because, I mean, of course I'm not. But back in 2016, when this all came out, when we didn't know who the doctor was necessarily, I mean, anybody in the gymnastics world did, and we didn't know who was accusing him. But when it first came out, I thought, this cannot be true. I've known this man since I was 10 or 11 years old. I've always known him to have a heart of gold. He was never creepy in any kind of way, and I completely trusted him, and he was the best guy at camp. I mean, he listened to us, and he let us gripe about our coaches and actually gave us food when we weren't being properly fed, and he was just really our friend. And so when this all first came out, I actually started kind of like a closed Facebook group with a bunch of former national team members, and I had about 40 to 50 girls on there, and I wanted to kind of share my story and just give them a ground to speak, and if they had any, you know, run-ins with him that were positive, and I asked for them to share negative as well. And I thought maybe if we could get enough support for him that we could like rally and send things to his lawyers and kind of, you know, get support for Larry, because this was the guy we all knew. And we had so many people come forward and say, oh my gosh, this is crazy. Larry's the best. And then once the child pornography stuff came out, that's when we kind of all threw our hands up and we're like, okay, maybe this is deeper than we all thought. But how it went on is because, like I said, his personality, right?
And yeah, like it sounds to me, again, I didn't experience that world, but it sounds to me from listening to you, like he really created that environment for y'all to feel comfortable around him.
It was trust. We all trusted him. It was Uncle Larry. We loved Larry, you know?
Well, he was the National Medical Coordinator for USA Gymnastics from 1996 to 2014. Also, was married for 21 years with three children. Supposedly, this family man and this highly lauded coach and doctor, trainer, and yet all this stuff was going on. It is hard to fathom that this was not known by some people.
Well, I think it was known by some.
It's not a surprise.
Well, why didn't people come forward before the last
few years? I think gymnasts had come forward and, you know, talked to their coaches. But in this world, you don't really say no to the USA Gymnastics Federation.
Yeah.
You don't say no to Marta Crowley because as young girls, our dreams are to go to the Olympics.
Mm-hmm.
And she is the woman who decides on that team. And so,
well, early on, I would think that many women might not have come forward because they thought they wouldn't be believed. This guy was a respected coach. But now, of course, over 250, including some of the biggest stars in the gymnastics galaxy, they have come forward. And the testimony was riveting. I can only imagine the pain that people around these young women, Susan, as you know, and Malia, the gymnastics usually starts when you're at a certain level, when you're very young. Parents trust their people who are training their children to treat them appropriately. I can understand why that man went after Dr. Nassar, whose daughters were abused by him.
Me too. I can't believe it didn't happen sooner. Mm-hmm. Actually,
well, he's going to a federal lockup. In fact, that's where he is right now in Tucson, Arizona, and it's because of the child pornography charges. And if he were going to a state prison, I would think he would be in danger of being killed. And that's
very
just
quickly
often what happens to people with these kinds of convictions. Do you have any sympathy for him at all?
I don't. I mean,
Malia does not.
Yeah.
Okay, like I said, I've known the guy. I know his family. his wife was so sweet. I know his daughter with autism, and it's just like I personally know the guy. So to see him, I don't have sympathy for a monster. No, I don't. But I, at the same time, it's like I kind of do, and I don't know why. And I feel
you were in, I mean, he created a spot in your life because again, that's. When you're in that world, and again, your goal is to go to the Olympics, like you kind of look past things.
All right. Well, here's a question from a listener, from Holly, asking if you received this kind of treatment from anybody independent of Dr. Nasser, either one of you, Susan, this pelvic.
No, it was only Dr. Nasser. And I mean, but he was, I mean, no, yeah, it was just him. And I didn't see, I mean, I saw him every, what, 3 months.
Now, I'm sure you had injuries as well, Malia, the gymnasts do. Were you ever mistreated in any way by anybody who was treating you for these maladies, injuries that come up from time to time?
Well, ironically enough, not anyone involved in the gymnastics world. So I used to get, I had a membership at Massage Envy, and I don't know if you've heard recently, but they're under a lot of scrutiny just for the masseuses that they have because, again, they kind of rotate in and out, but... bit Massage Envy, but not like an athletic trainer. Or
it was a man.
Like that.
Mm-hmm. Nasser, I've never stood beside the man, and these pictures, he doesn't look like a particularly physically imposing man. But I don't know that that really matters. He had the respect, and he had the position.
Yeah.
He had what now?
Well, we were 12-year-old gymnasts.
You were 12 years old, and you look up to this guy, and I would imagine some of these girls didn't know what the heck was going on.
Exactly,
when was the first time you were 11 when you were examined by him the first time?
When he did that examination, I was probably 15 or 16.
15 or 16. Did you think it was anything unusual about it?
I mean, of course, I'd never. We were homeschooled gymnasts. We had never kissed boys. We had never, been
touched.
We didn't
have experiences outside of gymnastics.
You have this adult man touching you in private places. That would seem to be
a bit... of course,
and he was doing it. Of course, we were doing it with nobody watching, too.
Actually, there was a guy my age sitting right next to me on the table. But, I mean, he was our doctor, and we trusted him, and we didn't ask questions, is the bottom line. And
well, it sounds like he is getting the punishment he so richly deserves. That's what the judge said when she put him away.
Yep.
So where does this go? Do you think we'll ever have another monster like him, or is this going to change the world for the better? Do you think his experience will happen?
I don't think he's alone. It's not
I don't
like
think he's alone. And certainly,
incident.
This went on for 20-plus years.
Yeah.
So... if there might be more like him, but we just don't know it yet.
And another listener asked about other sports. Certainly there's a capacity that something like this could have happened in another sport.
I would imagine so. I mean, again, this isn't like a surprise event that happens in women's sports, even in men's sports, too. But
or Catholic churches.
Yeah.
Well,
anything. Again, this is, I think we're noticing from this whole Me Too movement, it's not just suddenly in the past year, like, there are rapists out there. Like,
Well, this particular treatment, I would imagine people will be quite wary of using it, even if it's considered legitimate. It's in a very personal area. And in this case, it would have seemed like it might have been better to have somebody else do the treatment rather than him.
So the reason he did that on me was I couldn't bend over even, and it was...
You were hurting that badly.
I was hurting that badly, and we had brought in 3 chiropractors, and none of them could... It was like my SI joint was maybe out of socket. I don't really know. But we had brought in 3 chiropractors. None of them worked, and then he came into my hotel room and gave me a shot of Toradol, so a muscle relaxer, and then that didn't necessarily work. And then his last treatment to try was this perineum... pressure point, and that was the one that helped, and I was able to get through the competition.
What did you think of his reaction during the trial?
I didn't watch,
no,
to be honest.
It was too painful?
And disgusting, and it was, too much for me.
Well, it's fortunate that he has been stopped, but he went on, as you said, for a very long time, about 20 years before he was stopped, and unfortunately... these lives are forevermore changed because of his actions. But it's a sensitive topic, and thank you for sharing your story, Susan, and thank you for joining us, Malia. And we'll be back Monday, same time, same place. Certainly we'll be talking about the special legislative session, which starts next week on Monday. For Hallie Baltazar and Becca Dill, I'm Jim Inkster. Thank you for listening. Stay tuned.
For a podcast of today's show, go to WRKF.org or find the Talk Louisiana podcast on the WRKF app. We welcome your feedback and topic suggestions. Email us at talk@talklouisiana.org. Talk Louisiana is a production of WRKF.